It's Pie episode is 314. Cuss is here. We're going through the play-ins. We're talking about all kinds of stuff. Apparently, double flex is on the menu. Is it though, or are we just sim team peeing all over the place? And Yiska loves dogs, don't you, Yiska?
I love him. Love him.
You love dogs. Big dog guy over here. He's got that dog in him.
My favorite dinner, for sure.
What?
Fuck dogs, okay? With a tie eye.
What is this dog hatred? I haven't heard this. So,
he's got a weird history with dogs. We can start there.
Okay, so I'm a pretty regular runner, I would say. Like, it depends on the time. But like, I have weeks where I go five to six times, right? And okay. I swear, during those times, I get attacked once a month. It cannot just be my behavior in terms of like looking at them or like whatever it is, because I remember a couple of times I was out with friends and we were jogging as well, and then like just like a chocolate Labrador would just like from behind just like lunge at my behind. Like I wasn't aware of its existence. It couldn't be me stressing out or me like right. So like I don't know what it is, but honestly, like one time I felt like pretty close to the afterlife, because I don't know if you know what a kangal is. Like they're
a kangal.
They're like gigantic like mountain dogs that basically like what it comes down to is you absolutely want to rather fight an alpha wolf than a kangal, right? They're heavier.
Like sheep herding dogs almost.
They are heavier. They have higher bite force. They are scary as shit. And one time I was on a run, and I don't know why couples do this, but they always love to have their little shitter like off leash where I'm running. And an ankle biter just like straight beelines to me and goes for my shoes, right? And wants to bite me. Mm. And I'm already like super annoyed at this point, and I'll bring them up on screen. And I, in the distance, see a kangal, right? By a guy that legitimately weighs less than his dog. I'm already like, fuck me. So it's like a super tiny slope where I run, and then it goes down like a tiny path where I run, and then there's a slope down to the river, to the Rhine, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they're like bigger stones in the middle of the water, right? Like just where you can chill out and like people fish there and whatnot. And I see this dog from like, I don't know, 200 meters away. And I just like say, okay, that small dog, it's enough for today, right? Like that guy, if that dog wants to eat me, there's no way this guy can hold him. So I go down the slope, right? And as it so like had to be, this dog just like rips his leash off and just goes after me. And I'm like, just like, I'm not sure what it's called in English. I'm not even sure if you have those things, but it's like basically stones built into the river. It's called a mole in German. Maybe the Germans will be able to. But it's like big rocks placed into the water, and they have there will be like a lantern or whatever, like to signal to boats that you shouldn't drive as close, right? And then when there's high tide, they will be underwater. It wasn't high tide, it was pretty low. And I just stood there, and fortunately, this dog didn't want to climb on these rocks, okay? Like that pissed him off, but I was ready to jump into the Rhine to save myself. It probably wouldn't have. We probably would have both drowned, but I would have at least taken that fucker with me, okay?
But okay, I think here's the problem with like, and you sort of hit on that. I don't think shitty dogs is the dog's fault. Owners are the problem.
Yes,
like, if you got that shit, you gotta have, like, especially if you got a big dog. Like, my brother has a German Shepherd, and it's like, that boy decides to go, like, you need a thing. And you need to be prepared for that at any time, right? Like, I also agree, those little fucking dogs, they're like, oh, he's a little dog, he's cute. It's like, doesn't mean I want that guy fucking barking at me and biting me. And, like, people who have aggressive dogs, like, in 2019, when I was at my apartment complex, I remember, like, this pit bull just bit this other like person's dog and just like, and like fucked it up. And I was like, why would you, like, if you have an animal that you know has a temperament, like, why are you not having this thing, like, under permanent control? Right. Like, I just, I blame shitty dog owners. No, I don't blame the dog. Dogs are cute.
No, I agree. It is absolutely, like, I definitely also, before I like look at what the dog's behavior is like, I always look at the owner, because like that's the telling thing, right?
Mm.
By the way, interestingly, I have no issue when I've points, like, homeless people are legitimately the best dog owners. They never act out. Like, those dogs are always the cutest. Never heard a bark from them anyway, right? But it's like, when you already see, like, maybe the owner is already drunk, it's already pulling at the leash. Oh, my God. Like, at least those are leashed, right? But, the amount of folks, is maybe also where I run, or, like, I had to kick a German Shepherd recently. It wasn't fun.
I feel just like they can smell your fear, Yusuke. They can smell your disdain.
At some point, I was very much on that same tip where I was like, bro, you can't, like, you run into too many of these dogs that it's got to be you, but, like,
I mean,
there's something
to,
like, the delusional, like, countryside dog owner that just kind of lets their dog run, and I don't think they expect anybody to be around. So it's just like, oh, shoot, my dog is off leash on property, and there's, like, some guy running. I don't know how they're gonna react or interact, and they just go after him. It's
the amount of times you hear after he has never done that before is
insane. Oh my god, this is the first time. Yeah. Oh my god.
And to be fair, it has to be something about me. I'm not sure if it's the beard, I'm not sure if it's the running cadence, something that I signal through my body, movement when I run or whatever. But like something pisses dogs off more than the other runners, right? And I think I'm sure at this point, like, because my behavior changed due to learned behavior of like being attacked without me doing anything, it exacerbated the issue. But it's definitely also something where, like, I just get picked out of a group and will be attacked by this particular. It's just going to specifically ruin my day that day. And I have dogs of friends or like family, I have no issue with, right? Like, I know these people, I know the dog, I can cuddle with them, I can play with them, I have no problem. But like, there's something about maybe how I run or whatever that just pisses dogs off. And also, by the way, by beating up this German Shepherd, I settled the debate that I absolutely could take a wolf in a one-on-one fight. Okay, that's just entirely balanced.
He was put in that. Yeah, he took that "would you rather" and rathered it. Like, he was. Yeah. He has firsthand experience. He will take the wolf on with a katana over getting bullet anted.
Now the Kangol, no chance. You're done.
A lot of chimp ones in there too. A lot of like fighting a chimpanzee, and I think a lot of people get baited fighting a monkey. They're like, oh, it's like a cute monkey. It's like, no, that thing will rip your face off.
Yeah, those things are like, I feel like no one really understands what a wild animal would be. Like, how ferocious a wild animal is just like on a completely different level. Who was it, Avast, who said that he could beat a bear? He thinks that he could take a bear.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, that man is fucking insane if you think you can take a bear. I don't even know where I would begin to start of fucking up a bear.
What's the bear fighting strat? Like, what kind of macro game plan are we thinking here? Like, is it guns? Because even then, that's a bear.
No, he said with his bare hands. I think his like logic was like, if I can punch it in the nose off the bat, but I'm like, if you miss that first punch, like, it's fucking over. Like, if you're close enough to like try and punch it, like, it's there's no coming back from that. Like,
nah, he would. He would try, and then he would be in the Reverend 2. Okay, like, Leo would know, and another Alice player. Yeah.
I think everyone saw that movie and was like, you know what? Maybe I'm not gonna fuck with bears from now on. Maybe. Like, that was graphic. Like,
yeah, nah, no shot. Like, maybe he would actually it, and it's like a small brown. Like, I'm not sure what they're called, but like smaller bears, they're probably more scared of you than. Right?
Yeah,
like, those. But like a grizzly or whatever, nah. Kodiak, no shot, dude. Like,
polar bears are pretty, like,
polar bears are so,
they're
super aggressive.
Yeah. Well. Fuck.
Yeah. Like, that's the fun thing. My dad went on a cruise, and he went to Iceland. And every day they had, like, they booked, like, a tour, right? Except the one time they went to Iceland. And they were like, oh, we're just going to walk around here. They go out to Iceland. It's just like a thing there that says you cannot go past here because of polar bears without gun and, like, you know, someone escorting you.
Proper safety.
And that was basically, like, it for that excursion. Because, like, so polar bears at that time of the year are too dangerous in that location, apparently.
Wow.
Shout out on the hunt.
Bears scare the fuck out of me. Which people think are really funny because, like, I would much rather go be in Australia and deal with brown snakes and spiders than, because it's the evil that I know, right? Mm-hmm. While bears, I've like never seen a bear. And you just hear stories of people getting fucked up by bears. And I went camping in north of Toronto one time, like a while back. And like, they're like, oh yeah, we have to hang all of our food between two trees. And you're like, and you know, bears can climb trees. You just try and put it up there and stuff like that. So I'm like, well, I'm fucking terrified because like, and everyone's like, no, they're harmless. Just like leave them alone. Or if they do attack, you just make a loud noise. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Make a loud noise. Like what happens if it doesn't like that? So yeah, bears scare me. I just don't get them. But I understand people who have lived around bears. Yeah. They're just like, oh, they're so harmless. They're cute. Like,
What about
they're pretty docile, but
what are the evils that you know? Is there any like legitimately scary animal that where you're from that you have to learn to look out for?
Well, yeah, like in Australia, like where like I'm not like much in the country, but I live pretty suburban. Like you want to be careful walking through the garage. Like, we have redback spiders. Those things bite you, they will fuck you up. Like you're gonna have to go to the hospital or you'll die. Mm-hmm, right. Yeah. Same thing with brown snakes, but it's like a lesson that you learn is like when I'm walking through the garage, I'm not just going to walk into the dark, dank corner and just like start picking shit up and not looking what's going on. Or, you know, when I'm not going to walk through the brush in the middle of this like deserty area where a brown snake could just be vibing out. So it's kind of the same thing with bears, right? It's like you just mitigate the risk as much as you can.
Yep. 100%. And yeah, it is fascinating to hear people from like that side of the world, because it is like for us, it's like the great outback, and like there's so many poisonous and venomous and all the reptiles, and it's like, oh shit, so many things there can just fuck you up. And it's just like, yeah, but we don't realize that like we have like mountain lions and coyotes and bears and like
we have
a moose. Like people don't realize that like a moose will fuck your shit
for
up. Like a moose is like fuck. People don't like think about a lot of the stuff that we have that like very much in the same way that like some of the rest of the world just doesn't have, and it's just like I've never interacted with. So like, yeah, a bear, like what the fuck is a moose doing over here? Like these things are massive.
For us, everything has been killed that's remotely dangerous other than dogs. So dogs are the last frontier, maybe. Okay?
Oh man.
Yeah.
That said, with the ecological disaster that is Yiska fighting dogs, Custa versus a bear, and me getting snaked, this episode is brought to you by our beautiful patron producers. Those being Battle Crab, Refine, Bean, Bronze, Babu, Hell, Picasso, Lulshin, Porkchop, Sammy, Rexane, Volumel, and Sugar High, and our YouTube members, Blave, Bliss, IMDRW, Brother, Adam L, Ice Ham Jello, Fire Element 6, and AK. Sorry, I had to get it in there. Yiska, continue what you were saying.
No, I was just thinking about like reading a story about a woman going like, oh, this small octopus with like the blue little circles is so cute. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's like a highly venomous thing. And if it bites you, you're like, immediately dead.
An octopus? Really?
Yeah, like a small one somewhere on some coast in Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. If you don't know what it is, it's generally safe practice to just avoid it much as you can.
Don't fuck with it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people, koalas are a great example, right? Koalas are pretty cute, right? When you see them from a distance.
Sure.
Those things have the world's sharpest, well, not actually the world's sharpest, but they have sharp as fuck claws. Like, if you get too close, like, if they swing at you, it'll rip your skin off. Yeah, it'll tear everything off. And they also have chlamydia. Like, every single koala, has chlamydia. Yeah, they're just dirty as fuck, and they're high out of their minds on eucalyptus. So it's like, you don't know what they're going to do. So, like, that's a classic mistake of, like, because we had koalas every time, like, all over the place where I live. But, yeah,
shout
a
out
lot
the
of,
drop
like,
bears, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and drop bears. You know, you got to be careful of those. Like, yeah, you just got to don't touch them, ever.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the American tourist trap where it's like, oh, it's a cute little bear cub. And like, they're so cute. And they're just eating their little leaves. They're just little guys. It's like, no. Dirty.
Also,
gross.
When they fuck, they're so loud. Holy
really?
Shit. But yeah, because we had a lot of trees. And like, we know when a koala has set up in one of our trees because you'll hear it at like six in the morning.
So funny.
It's just loud grunting, like very loud grunting. And you're like, oh my God. Good times. Miss Australia.
Hilarious. What a scene to wake up to. Go back to bed. The koalas are fucking. Oh, man. Now, this is not a primer for the entire episode. There is actually a lot to talk about, but, like, sometimes you just need to... You just gotta warm it up a little bit with some banter. You gotta get a little... Got a little taste of home.
Who's the bear you wouldn't want to fight in play-ins, Joe?
The bear I wouldn't want to fight in play-ins? There's a couple bears I would not want to fight in play-ins. I think the biggest one is maybe the Boston bear. The great uprising bear is probably who I would not want to fight.
No,
and then there's some, like, wily ones. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I think the Boston Uprising is the bear, while, like, maybe the London Spitfire is, like, it's like a venomous, like, analogy? Jellyfish, you know?
Okay,
it's like,
sure.
It's like, it looks harmless, you don't think much about it, you're unsuspecting, and then fucking, boom, it touches you, you're dead, and you lose the game, right? And that's kind of, like, what happened to the London Spitfire. Like, they underestimated the strength of London Spitfire, and I think a lot of other teams do as well. Like, in this meta, the Ryan Sim shit is difficult to deal with.
They're a tricky team. Like, they're... We had Chris on a couple episodes back, and he was talking about, like, all their, like, sim stuff, and he's like, oh, I hope somebody picks Gibraltar against us, and we're gonna run, like, Ryan against him, and he thinks, like, Ryan's, like, just the shit right now, and I'm like, sick. Like, I'm here for it. Give me some more styles. And I think when you look at their shot game, and you look at their game versus Boston, like, they're trying all kinds of stuff with their TPs. They're sending solo TPs. They're sending Bap and Bastion, and they're trying to just get, like, a quick wheels out, like, in their face. They're doing it with Window. Hottie's just now flanking constantly, where they send four one way, and he just kind of, like, stands there and then just pins into you. And they're tricky, man. You don't know. I don't know what to expect. They could come out, and they're like a little knife fight. Like, you don't know where the knife's coming from, but it's gonna bite you.
I think you saw some counters coming out from Boston. There is a cap to the effectiveness of the London Spitfire, but the question is, like, do any of the other teams other than Boston have that ability? Like, obviously Shock came up, like, very empty trying what they were trying to do. You cannot, and I think this is an issue that I think the Shock ran into and why I was pleasantly surprised to see Boston beat it, is you can't just beat it with individual mechanics. Like, you can't just hit them with the, hey, we're better than you. You need to have the coordination and a game plan to be able to deal with it. And that's my fear of, like, you know, the other team that is favorited to make it through, does a team like Toronto Defiant and the composition they're playing have the ability to handle this Reinhardt?
It doesn't feel like Defiant as a whole. There's a part of me that want, like, hears, like, the Timmies going, oh, at least, like, the, you know, the Timmies that, like, watch the games, they're like, oh, well, they could just, like, poke down the shield, and it's like, there's no shield to shoot. Like, they're just hiding behind a corner, and then they 3-2-1, they TP behind you, and then, like, Hottie's pinning from, like, an off angle, and they're just on your back line. Like, what is Ilari supposed to do? What is Bap supposed to do? Like, Lamp's only gonna last for so long. Like, they're just in your face. There's no poking going on. They're just on top of you. And that's where it's like, and you can kind of, podcast listeners, you can't see it, but, like, on your screen, we've got a little bit of a clip from Midtown, and that's where it's like, I feel like London are at their, they struggle a little bit on these escort hybrid objectives where they have a little bit too much distance to cover, and it's not just like a one TP jump in, get into the fight where, like, a control or, like, a flashpoint is going to be, but these, like, multi TP, like, leapfrogs, like, maybe you used to see on, like, Hanamura back in the day, it's just a little slower, and it gives teams way more opportunity to kind of collapse in on them. And they have to, like, it's still, they have, like, a very clear game plan of, like, where they want to go, where they want to fight. They'll try to, like, get a tick here and there, but I kind of want, like, a little bit of different looks maybe on, like, escort. I don't know.
I think it's also, I think there's something to be said, not just about the distance covered, but also the quality of the options that they have for their TPs. Because it feels like it's not like they have one set route that they want to handle. I think, like, every time they just look at how their opponent positions and, like, what time it is in their rotation or whatever, and then they just decide on a teleport location. And that might be, like, 3 to 6 different locations that they might teleport you on in any given moment. And that very much is down to map architecture as well, right?
I think so, too. I think Midtown A in particular, it feels like there's not a ton of options where it's like I need to get from like under the train to the point. And the only good way, like the only good place to like put your TP exit is like either like to the right in like the like towards the spawn in that little closet like area, or to the left with the health pack that like leads up to the high ground. And you kind of see them getting funneled in there a lot, and like Bastion's all gets kind of like a lot of value in there because you're all just bunched up. You don't have a ton of space to like run around. So like there are points where, yes, you should be able to TP all over the place, get a ton of value. They have all their flow charts, but there, it does feel like there are some mismatches in the map pool that they're just like, yeah, we don't really have a ton of like optionality. And that's where it's just like, I feel like there's room for them to like maybe deviate a little bit where it's not just like, oh, we just get off Rhine. But I'd like to see Sparker maybe on 76 a little bit. I feel like you can keep Backbone on May. Maybe you still play the Sim stuff and you just let Sparker run around. I'm bought into the Titan stuff, which we'll get to. But like he's saying, just running around being a little nuisance. I feel like you could splash that in every once in a while and maybe catch some people off guard.
I think that's like a required adaptation that the Spitfire needs to like throw in. And I think that's something that was a little disappointing about the Boston loss, right? Is that they didn't really have that adaptation. Yeah. What they were trying... what stopped working, right, in a lot of regards. And instead of being like, well, maybe we can throw these minor iterations in, right, as you said, the Sparker Soldier or something like that, felt like they just went down with the ship. And you kind of need to do that at this point. And I think that's kind of the London Spitfire. They're just going to go down playing with what they know. But I agree. The thing that always impresses me so much is what sort of Yiska hit on a little bit, which is they really seem to have an endless playbook on every single map of like being able to TP into certain spots. Yeah. And the fluidity in which they do that as well is the thing that makes them so successful, right? Their ability to set up a TP and their entire team to go through it instantly is what is their like secret sauce. Like I think it's actually in this match in particular where you don't see that level of coordination from Shock, and it's specifically Proby, who like sim TPs into the opposition and just teleports on his own and then just dies. And you're like, that never happens to London, right? And everyone's always waterfalling and cascading into these teleporters. So I don't know. I think there is an end of the line coming for London Spitfire. The question isn't really like, are they going to win the Overwatch League? It's more, where does the run end? Are they actually going to make it to the playoffs? And if they do make it to the playoffs, will that work in the new patch as well?
That's kind of another big question, is like, especially for a lot of these more stylistic teams where it's like, you know, the patch isn't huge. I think the obvious like winner here is like Zarya, Orisa being like a little tweaked. The Queen stuff isn't huge. I feel like maybe the Bastion stuff, I think last patch was kind of slept on, and I think teams got a hold of it and really kind of saw the value there. So him being a little bit tweaked could alter things. But do we think that like a new Zarya look is really gonna like upheave all of the meta, or is it just gonna add to it?
The big question, like, I've played a bunch of ranked since Zarya came in. She's definitely a lot stronger. You can actively feel how much value she gets from bubbling other people.
Sure.
And you know, people love to be like, oh, it's just the projected barrier. People are freaking out in the wrong way. But the projected barrier now provides 45 energy and not 40 energy. It also has a 2 second shorter cooldown. And then when you synergize that with a DPS hero who can utilize those, a Reaper, a Genji, or something like that, that's very valuable, right? And that, like, that buff is enormous. So you're essentially getting more energy, you're getting more bubbles, and you're absorbing more damage onto that one carry. So I think it will definitely get playtime. The question is the extent of how strong is it? Sure. Does it completely invalidate the Junker Queen comp, right? Because all of a sudden you can bubble off all of these, you know, rampages and or any of these dots that she's throwing out. Does it invalidate the Reinhardt? All of a sudden the Zarya has too much damage. Or, you know, people have made this example. If you try to play Zarya, will teams just go back to playing Winston?
Yeah.
Like, Zarya gets kind of hard screwed by these Winston dive comps because it becomes very hard to get energy and it plays faster than you can keep up as a Zarya. So if we do go into the next patch, for all we know, Winston teams might end up being the true winner.
Yeah, because if memory serves, like, that last patch, he wasn't changed much. Like, a lot of that comp just wasn't changed. There was just more, like, the Winston kind of
Beta got outpaced a little bit by some of this Junker Queen, Orisa, Bastion stuff. So could go back.
I feel like the social component is pretty big here because the of course the teams are already qualified. I know already practicing with the new patch in mind, right?
Right.
And they just get to dictate whatever is going to be the thing, right? Like the playing teams, when they are still like high on adrenaline off their qualification, and then okay, breather. Okay, when are our flight tickets? Okay, right. So scrim blocks. Meanwhile, these qualified, especially the NA teams, those three have been in a hyperbolic time chamber because they can only practice against each other realistically, right?
Right.
Unless they find some contenders team or whatnot, and they already. Like, even if it wasn't the absolute best meta comp, the best team that wins the most scrims there will, you know, determine in what direction a lot of the playoff meta will be trending because nobody else has the amount of time required, right? I'm sure, like, if London was to make it, they would probably try their own spin depending on what the meta actually looks like, right? But I feel like the social component here is not to be underestimated that... Not just because they have more time, but also the quality of their practice just because of the filtering right now would, in theory, you would think like they're so much better. You could also argue, though, that maybe they have some strategy in order to not necessarily like help their closest opponents the most. Maybe there is some way they can work around it with contenders teams or whatnot, with the capacity, but the quality of the practice wouldn't then be the same. What I can tell you is... Like a lot of scrim blocks just have been cancelled based on that knowledge, right? Like because it makes no sense for the already qualified teams to play the playing teams that want to play on the old patch, right? So
yeah,
this social component is not to be underestimated in this situation, I think.
And I think that's a really important point when you think, because whenever you go into a new patch, there is about a week of scrims where people are just throwing shit at the wall, right?
Sure.
Like every team that goes into this new patch is going to be, let's try Zarya, right? Like, let's see how effective she is. Is there a comp here, right? And because you're still 3 weeks out from actually having to play those juggernaut teams that you're scrimming against, you're willing to practice against them so early on because what you're playing now isn't an indicator of what you are going to be in 3 weeks, isn't an indicator of what you're going to be playing then. So you're willing to show strats. And it's almost like them working together and collaborating to be like, what works, what doesn't work, and what do we think is the best? And this is what... As you said, these play-in teams that are still trying to qualify, they don't get that luxury. Once this weekend is over, all the play-in teams are locked in, then they have to spend that week working out what is best, right? Yep. And it's not as always going to be as easy as you can't just step up and be like, oh, what are the top three teams who qualified playing? What's Atlanta playing? Let's just copy that. That's not going to work for you, right? Like that's not going to work for the London Spitfire. So they are at a massive disadvantage moving forward. You know, they're always going to be at a disadvantage. And I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, but that chasm might be huge between these teams, given the limited amount of practice that they have to play.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of upside for the teams that are locked in. I color me a little bit on the flip side, I suppose, where it's like, I wonder if there is something, because we've seen in the past where it's like teams like London, teams that are like super, you know, hyper stylistic, they don't tend to be super scrim favorable, let's say. Nobody likes scrimming the Ryan team. Nobody likes scrimming Chengdu and their stupid ball comps. So is there something to the idea that whoever does lock in during play-ins, is there a lack of experience with the new patch? Could that be more of a boon than we're letting on, where it's like everybody's kind of like in this own, I guess, isn't there like a famous like movie director that like never like kind of like made it big, never really directed a movie, and it was the idea that like he looked at it from like a novice's eye and was like just very out of the box with like the rules and like everything was like not standard with him, and it made his movies more interesting. And I feel like maybe some of these playing teams, depending on who makes it, I'm looking at like Toronto and maybe London probably is like the two that probably could, maybe obviously Boston is like locked in, maybe number one, but is there something to like maybe this more stylistic teams that could be a weird, again, like you said earlier, Custa, not a title winner,
but like a big thorn in the side because they haven't been in that scrim bubble of like, okay, it's Zarya, it's this, and that's what all you run, and what the fuck are they doing on Wrecking Ball, or what are they doing on Doomfist? Like, is there something there?
I think there is that idea, but at that point you're playing like Russian roulette, right? Mm-hmm. And I think like let's use a famous example because you brought up the Chengdu Hunters of 2019. They were like, we're gonna do this shit differently. Instead of playing goats, we're gonna play Wrecking Ball, right? And you saw limited success at the very beginning of when they started doing it because people didn't know how to deal with it, right? Like people just straight up didn't have an answer to it. But as soon as the cat was out of the bag, everyone was like, okay, well, if we just... And as soon as one person proves how you solve that problem, right? As soon as one team beats you in a match and people can look at that and be like, well, that's what we do. Like, then all of a sudden, it's over for that. And all of a sudden, they were now so far behind on what the actual meta was that they could never go back. And I think I've actually told this story on this podcast before, but that happened against us against Chengdu Hunters in 2019. Yep. We were going into that match like, they're probably going to play Wrecking Ball. We should practice. We watched their VODs. We worked out what our game plan was. And then they put Kharian in on Reinhardt. And they were like, oh, they're going to play goats. We fucking won because we know they just trash at the meta. Yeah. So that's what makes it Russian roulette is you can have your pocket picks and do something different, but there is a chance that it just doesn't work. And that's the issue. Very few teams have been able to innovate and then have long-term success. I think the only team that I can actively think of that ever did that is Dallas Fuel.
Yes.
And they did that last playoffs. They determined the meta.
Not even like season 2, stage 3, like Shanghai with like the weird like multi-DPS stuff?
I think the problem with that idea is that the reason a lot of teams started doing different things, like playing Sombra Goats, playing Pharah Goats, is because we were informed that we were adding Warlock in stage 4. So people were just throwing anything they could at the wall to get as many wins short term. You were no longer being like, we have to be good at goats for the future because goats was about to not exist.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. There is specialty, right? Like that playing a Pharah comp into goats, that they became so good at it, no one could beat them. Right. On the Spitfire Reinhardt. They're so good at it that people don't know how to beat them until they do, right? And that becomes the inherent issue. And that's the same question I have for Toronto Defiant and the London Spitfire right now. How far can they go before it stops working?
Yeah. I like the analogy of the Russian roulette because it's like, do we think, and this is no shade to these playing teams, but I think that both like Toronto and London, Boston, obviously, they're all very talented. But like outside of Boston, because I think you probably could say this about Boston, are Toronto and London gonna be able to like match up? Like if we do walk in, if you're either one of those playing teams and you're walking into this scrim bubble and it's like, okay, we're behind. We don't even know if we're gonna mechanically be able to like pilot this, you know, composition. Is it worth much in that same like goats era discussion? It's like, okay, do I practice goats to try and try to make up the difference, or do I just try to go for short term and make a stab and just try to spin the chamber and hope I don't hit a bullet? You know, is it like it's tough.
I'm gonna be honest, Joe. Like, they are playing for a good time in Toronto right now. It isn't like,
sure, yeah.
If anyone that isn't one of those top 3 NA teams gets remotely close to sniffing at the final, someone fucked up. Like, not only are they clearly the most talented teams this season, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also the system is so stacked against them where,
yeah,
like, I'm not sure what the already qualified teams are doing. Like, theoretically, in a world where we're still like super like charged and have the resources, ideally Spark and Infernal
are already
in a plane, right? And trying to get in on that scrim. I'm not sure what's happening. I should probably ask that, but a team like whatever it's going to be in a play-ins in APAC, like maybe Dallas, right? They are just so far behind. It's crazy, right? Like, and the only copium that you could realistically have is that you could argue there's no Zarya like Hanbin right? So like maybe that X factor introduces some volatility and also the expertise that Rush has for that particular meta as well, right?
Yep.
That could bring some novelty into that. Anything else than a massively stacked deck on a balance side in favor of any of those play-in teams, and you're looking at like them getting their faces chewed off polar bear style, okay? Like there's it's not
good callback.
It's not that the those teams are even like slouches in meta innovation, especially Florida being one of those teams. Actually, probably definitely. Like whatever the best balance state is, those fuckers will have played that comp at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe they might not be playing it. Maybe they will just have that as part of their like gigantic Rolodex of comps they can run. But they will have figured that shit out. Okay, and that's a big issue for the competition there. It, of course, like once you're on LAN, and let's be honest, a lot of these players have not played on LAN.
Yeah.
There's another X factor introduced. That's where my copium comes from. Not the, oh, and then I come out of Plagueis and there's a new canvas. No, there's a polar bear behind that canvas, Joe.
Believe me when I say it's not like I think that they're going to like innovate and they're going to have the right meta read. It's more, I like what you're saying with like the volatility where it's like, I have like there's no reason for me to believe that like we're going to be able to catch up, like hypothetically speaking, on a team's behalf. Like we're not going to catch up. There is a lot of volatility. We're going to land. We're going into these live environments. There's a new meta. Everybody's kind of still a little bit unsure. As much as everybody believes that, you know, they're high on their own farts, there's still kind of like some shaky ground. Obviously, you have a team like Florida doing some wacky stuff. But there's something there that I feel like some of these playing teams are going to be dangerous. I 100% agree. They're not going to make it very deep, but I feel like there's going to be some serious upset potential, especially early on when I just don't see a world where you try to catch up or you're able to catch up. Maybe Boston can. I feel like they're capable of it, but they're going to be that second playing team could be scary depending on who it is.
I'm going to be honest. If I was a betting man, this is going to, like, if you do the math, it's ridiculous. 70% either Atlanta or Florida wins the final at this point. I think Houston, based on what meta interpretation is coming, is out. If the Bernard report is already, like, like, if that rumor is true, they probably have an inkling where the meta might be going. Yeah, yeah, if they have to, like, not rely on Fearless to carry them, that's a big weapon gone. I'm sorry, like Bernard is not going to be the same level of hyper carry on the Zarya role that Fearless is on the Winston, right? Like you can't expect that. Realistically, the only player that is like this is Hanbin on that hero. So, like, I just feel like it's all going in Atlanta's or Florida's favor at the moment.
I think if you're the Atlanta Reign and you're the Florida Mayhem, I actually think the team you are most scared of is the Houston Outlaws, because I think Houston is the team to play Russian roulette. Like, I think they're the team they're the ones that, okay, the meta goes against them. They're the team that I think would do something fucking different. And we even just saw that in this summer stage, right, where they played Doomfist and Akiriko or whatever the fuck they were playing. And they were playing something that no one else was even touching, right? And it worked really well because people just didn't know how to deal with it. And I think Junkbuck's a good enough coach. I think these players understand their limitations well enough that if they end up getting their backs against the wall, they'll throw something and they'll throw hands. And I think, yeah, it could go terribly, but even then they'd get like top four, I would still say. But I don't expect to see Houston walk in and try and go toe-to-toe with Atlanta trying to play a Zarya meta. Like, that would just be a fool's errand.
And they got a time to develop a response, right? That's exactly, the crucial part, right? Yeah. No, I completely agree. Like, that, based on that, like, Houston could be very scary. And to be honest, like, just because they signed something doesn't mean it strongly suggests a meta position. I also think, like, this team is really after a championship. So, like, the fact that they even would entertain something like that, if that is indeed true, is kind of dope. But, yeah, I think that's definitely an argument that because they have the time resources as well, that they have a chance to catch up to these. Yeah, maybe 70% is higher.
Also, Yusuke, I have a question for you. You're a rules man and you sort of know a lot what's going on. Are teams able to sign any player that is a free agent? What is the limitation of this?
I think trades. This is just based on prior established patents. I think what is likely currently the case is you cannot sign or trade anyone that had an active PSA by the time of the cutoff. That I don't know when that happened. So an active Overwatch League contract. You can sign Contenders players. And how that translates in APAC, I have no idea. If that also translates to that their contract. If you could, for instance, I don't know, sign someone from Dreamers or whatever, just because they're no longer in the Overwatch League or they cannot make it, could you sign someone from Dreamers maybe, right? Like, I'm not sure how that works. Or O2, could you sign Who Are You? I'm not sure.
Could you sign Choicer One, right? Like, Choicer One is someone who's not under contract anymore for the Guangzhou Charge, as far as we're
it's
aware. Like,
question,
he
yeah.
is a great DPS player. He could get signed in. Obviously, most teams are looking at tanks with, you know, off-tank meta potentially looming. But, yeah, because I haven't really understood the whole situation of, like, because people, like, teams are signing players, and I'm like, we're in the playoffs. What do you mean we're signing players? Like, usually there's limitations on that.
That window should be closed, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm just trying to understand how the ruling is going for the playoffs and, like, what that's... Because we've heard rumors about all these players getting signed, but it hasn't officially happened. So I don't know if that's the league stepping in or if teams are going to have the ability to do that and what the limitations of that are.
Yeah, if I'm reading the breadcrumbs a little bit, are you maybe, like, kind of, like... Not worried. Worried's not the word, but, like, are you pointing towards something? Maybe like another Decay situation where it's like, is this gonna maybe happen? Where, like, Decay gets dropped or traded, and then Justice, like, almost make it kind of vibes.
For me, as a caster, who a lot of my job is to build storylines throughout the season of teams, the league, all that type of stuff, it invalidates everything that we know to this point, right?
Right.
So, like, Houston is a great example of, if they sign Bernard to come in and play Zaya at the final hour. What do we talk about? Okay, Bernard is a great player, but we have no idea. We have no history. We had nothing to draw from to talk about this player or this team, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, a funner narrative for the Houston Outlaws that we've been growing on is Fearless is the only tank. He has to play something different. Right. He
on
can't. So now Houston does have to play a little cheesy. That's a fun storyline to dig into and for the playoffs. And now you're taking that away by just signing players in the playoffs where teams are going to look very different to the way they did to get there. And that's why most leagues don't allow those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think, as Eric pointed out, there's the precedent of, like, them signing a backup for Fixer. I'm not sure if the league would make an exception. I think, like, that's why you have a substitute, theoretically, as weird as it is. Poco would have realistically... Like, if all everything was close at this point, then Poco would have had to play flex support, or they would have had to switch around some stuff. I think what realistically probably is happening is what I said. It's like, you cannot sign all players, which would be whack. Imagine, like, Justice doesn't make it, and someone signs Eiffel Yee and, like, should just fly him out to Toronto, right? Like, that would be stupid.
That'd be hype.
But Choicer One.
No, it wouldn't. It'd be fucked up.
Choicer One
would be hot.
Has not had an active PSA for a minute. Is
a little bit, yeah.
I think, like, by those standards, he should probably be eligible.
He should
for
be able
that.
To be signed, right? Like, he hasn't played. I think it was, like, July when he, which is probably before the window.
Yeah.
When he got dropped. Because, so, like, there are teams that, like, could potentially look at him, right? Like, let's consider a team like, let's go like London. Dallas Fuel or something like that, right? Where it's like, we end up in a meta where, like, all of a sudden, maybe Edison's limited hero pools, like, let's say it's not a Reaper meta or a Soja meta, right? And you're like, well, we want someone with more punching power. You could sign Choicer One there, and, like, he could absolutely come in and be a difference maker for them in certain metas. So,
listen, don't ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness.
Smart. Honestly, it'd be the most thing ever.
Bring him to Toronto. Just see what happens.
Just bring him. He's wearing a jersey, and they're like, "Who the fuck's that?" And they're like, "Don't worry about it.
Let Sean Miller figure this out. Okay, let the front office decide, and you guys just start winning games. Okay, just win. Just worry about victory.
And what are they going to do? Suspend you for next season? Come on, that'd be ridiculous.
I think it is a good, but let's be honest. I'm not sure how many orcs are left that would pony up that also could realistically
the full armada. Just bring everybody.
I heard you guys were talking shit, so we brought the region.
That's the thing. Like, who would you replace on Infernal that and not feel like shit that you like? Because I think, like, the teams that are in playoffs are likely either. Mm-hmm. Already super squads, where augmentation is very hard, or they are like based on a team structure in the way how they play together, and in like putting someone in last minute could threaten like, I don't know. I feel like London, if you like in the middle of the night come go into their room, go like TP 1 2 3, their index fingers of their like left hand just goes to F like and clicks right.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard to get that if you pick up in the last moment, regardless of the economic like realities of this league, that it also would cost money to get someone over, and depending on who it is. I think realistically, maybe Toronto.
Yeah. I don't know. I could see, like, you can't tell me Soul Infernal aren't like looking at Mag and they're like, do you know how to play Zarya? And sort of like raising that question a little bit. Yeah. And sort of like having, like, wondering, like, is it like, Infernal legitimately might be like, do we just bring Poco to Toronto, like, just in case? Like, that's probably not a bad, like, it's what's it going to cost you, a plane ticket, right? Like, maybe it could work, right? And it could be better for them in the long run. Because if we do end up in a hard Zarya meta, there are a lot of teams that I think are going to get exposed by this situation, right? And then all of a sudden, the depth of the Atlanta roster really starts to show its value.
It's Dennis Wood doesn't make it in. It's the last hour. You're Snowsworth. Dude, it'd be
so. I know Dallas fans already hate me, but it'd be so funny if we ended up in a hard Zarya Reaper meta and then Dallas didn't make it. Like, I don't know. That'd just feel funny to me.
They don't make it.
How you gonna hate the boy?
And then Hanbin steps onto the stage for your snout loss.
Oh my!
In a Texas last minute Texas.
It's Hanbin's music.
Yeah.
Agar.
Do 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 do.
I like that would be the most. I mean. It's always been a joke of like, you know, what if we were just like professional wrestling at some point? I feel like we just kind of need that. We need like the Brenji to just come back and just like, just like who wouldn't just like imagine like the crowd pop if we're all expecting like a obviously like every like venue has like the arena host, and it's just like they just get Bren and he's in his old like goofy like pool noodle like cosplay of like Widowmaker. Like, imagine the eruption of the crowd to like welcome that back in. And then Hanbin's like jumping off and he's tearing off his jersey and he's a Houston Outlaw now. Like, come on.
That would be entertainment. Yeah, I'd be down. And it'd be a good time. So if I can...
Like the
Overwatch League, just lean into the silly.
Yeah. Overwatch League fans also cannot tell me like all these like the conversations on our competitive Overwatch are already tilting me again. Like glasses shoved up. Actually, the strengths of scheduling in A fucked some teams again. Like nobody, none of you fucks care about competitive integrity whatsoever. Stop lying and falsifying your preferences, you little shit. You do not care. And this, like, do you understand in what situation we are in? We are not optimizing for competitive integrity. We are optimizing for entertainment in a lot of those decisions, right? To pair, like, to criticize, there's ample opportunity and reason to criticize, like, how the format has worked here and there across this season. To say, oh, competitive integrity, when what it did is pair the best teams against each other more frequently. Mm-hmm. And, yes, has probably fucked the glads out of whatever. Like, that you are at a point in time where competitive integrity, if you adhere to it, you do not have competition.
No.
Right? Like, you have to design systems to keep the lights on. Yes, to keep the electricity in the building on, right? So, like, while there are good reasons to be annoyed at format situations or, like, decisions, that is not one of them. Like, it actually also delivered a couple of really good matches. And by the same token, personally, while I agree, like, the storytelling, whatnot, would be shit, at the same time, like, if Hanbin actually did walk out for Dallas Fuel and get a Finals MVP, it would be fun as shit, right?
Like, hype.
And in many ways, like, it feels like it could be the last celebration. Dude, I'm feeling a way, like, seeing Fares. We're never going to see, maybe, never going to see Kevstar on, like, we're not going to see Kevstar in Toronto, right? Like, that's already fucking insanity, right? Like, Johnny was ready to decapitate me when I said Kefsta does not deserve a DPS role star this year, right? Like, in the first after the first half of the season. Now, yeah. Like, probably doesn't, right?
Yeah, no, he's not going to be a role star, I'm pretty sure, like, at this point, right? Like, he just hasn't lived up. And, like, I agree with you, like, Yiska. Like, I actually think a lot of the issues of this season's format have been harbored by the fact that it feels like they're trying to make everything incredibly competitive via, you know, competitive integrity, that it's made it so weird and so wacky that it's hard to understand. It's convoluted. And, like, yes. I think they're just listening to Reddit. Like, as someone who used to be a pro player, like, yes, it sucks when these things go against you. But, you know, like, even when I was a player, it was like, well, maybe we should just win more fucking games, right? Like, what does it fucking matter if, oh my God, I had to play harder teams more often? Well, how about you just fucking beat better teams, right? Like, if you can't beat those teams, what does it matter, right? You want to be the better of the bottom half? Like, congratulations, it doesn't accomplish anything. Yes, there's money. Yes, you want to go to land. There's all those things. But I just want to see the best level of competition and the teams try to beat the best. I don't want to see rules get bended. I don't want to see things having to change because the competitive format has changed so much that it doesn't feel like I'm watching teams just try and be the best. It feels like I'm watching rules play out. And that's what I'm watching. And so I'm having to watch the same teams do the same thing, doing nothing that's really changing or evoking, I guess, just excitement. Like, I understand as a franchise league that we need to see every team equally, right? And we have to watch Vegas play just as many games as Atlanta. But I don't want to watch Vegas play as many games as Atlanta. I want to watch Atlanta play, right? I'd rather watch knockout games or small tournaments like we had last year with four tournaments that, people are like, oh, they can only play four matches. So what's the competitive integrity of a tournament where you have a hard schedule? It's like, who gives a fuck? At least we're watching a tournament, right? At least I'm watching some teams compete for something. And that's really my take on it. And I think a lot of the criticisms that have harbored on Twitter and Reddit of the formats really sort of led us down this path of where we are now, of they've tried to create something that feels competitively balanced, but it's led to just, in my opinion, less impactful matches more often.
100%. And some of the biggest esports in the world don't have like the most competitive integrity focused formats. I mean, League of Legends still, if I'm remembering correctly, the world is still like single elim. Like, hey, nobody likes that, but you know what? People fucking watch. Why? Because it's an entertaining product and it's, you know, one shot. That's all you got. Sometimes people get upset and you go the distance. Obviously, it's not the best, but, you know, there's stakes on the line, right? There's a reason why, like, March Madness, obviously, is, like, the big analogous thing for Western fans.
But, yeah, like, that's a big thing in, like, American sports I've been getting more into, like, as I've been living in America. Like, fucking, you watch college football, right? You lose one game that you're not supposed to lose. GG, you don't get to play for the fucking final game. Like, that's the thing. You know what the solution to that is? Don't lose. That's what makes great teams great, right? And that's what makes the competition. When every match you are fighting for your life and fighting to accomplish this greatness, right? Obviously, it's not relative to Overwatch League or esports as much, but that creates hype. And that's where the excitement comes from, in my opinion. And I think sometimes in esports, we coddle players too much because obviously we have a lot of compassion for these people as we have more control over their lives and we see their careers and we feel parasocial attachment to these players, right? But at the end of the day, we're top end competition and people should treat it like that, right? And that's a frustration that I've had with a lot of esports over these last, not just Overwatch League.
Agreed. You need to introduce some form of negativity. Like, there's a weird thing. I'm sure it is in other countries as well. I just known it from the German perspective. But legally, your prior employer is not allowed to give you a bad review. So what developed is a codified language of positive adjectives that will tell your next employer that you're shit. Okay?
That's so funny.
Because, like, A, negativity needs to be expressed. But if everything is good, then nothing is, right? So you kind of need to set a new baseline. Okay, like, this is why, like, the word GOAT now means absolutely nothing anymore since Zoomers had their shot at it, right? But the bottom line is, like, I agree, like, there needs to be some negativity introduced. But basically, what I would like people to stop messing with the livelihoods of folks, because here's how a system works perfectly, okay? Talent says some shit. Fans of the victims of that shit get angry. Talent goes, that's my job, pog. Team that was victim of that flame does not go to the league and call that out, but rather realizes that the pie has just been grown by everyone getting pissed off collectively, and they might even get some fans out of it for being in that position where they maybe justly or unjustifiedly were called out. And we're not doing this. Could you stop that? If you don't stop that, we don't know if this will, you know, facilitate a future where you can still be brought on, blah, blah, blah. Like, no. Yeah. Like, stop fucking with people's livelihoods in that manner, right? Like, don't set, like, negative reviews or whatever it might be. I'm not saying that anyone would get fired for continuing that, but, like, more like where it has professional repercussions. It is actually part of the deal to be the asshole, right? Like, I think... And it is also the fans' job or the fans' entertainment to go into the subreddits and the in the Twitter feeds and go like, ah, this was like way too hard. Like, why would you say that? That's part of the entertainment cycle.
Yes.
That then the other party goes like, ah, no, I actually kind of like that. Like, you're way too soft about this, blah, blah, blah. And that kind of like interaction is the friction. This is competition, right? Like, If it was any other endeavor of, like, if we're looking at a beautiful art piece or, like, we're dancing, whatever, like, we're not trying to compete against each other and trying to, like, you know, we're not jamming out. We're actually legitimately trying to find the best solution for a problem that has really clearly defined rules, right? And there is some friction there to be introduced, and to sanitize that is a problem. And I think, like, for a lot of it, the problem is that the power and the incentive structure is for teams to realistically, like, sometimes things go too far to, like, protect their brand, but it should realistically, like, yes, everyone should say their thing and then nothing should change realistically, right? Like, just keep going. That's how the sports industry does it as well. Like, that's one of the few comparative examples where sports entertainment and esports entertainment kind of actually where the similarities work, because it is in the way the story is told is very similar, right? Like, it's a competitive environment where there is adversity, there is like competition and like competitiveness of ideas, and like, you know, like one of the biggest story narratives in the NBA that are selling is like, you know, the old guard against the newer ones, and how that would have, like, all that friction is what makes the competition spicy. Of course, you have to have thresholds. Like, you cannot get personal or whatever, right? Like, keep it on the games.
There's obviously a line,
right? Yeah. Like, it's, I understand, like, basically whatever, in esports, it's actually really easy. You never criticize the person behind the nickname. Just go at the nickname, the player that you're on the server. There's a clear delineation between, you know, like Huang Leaf Xin, or Huang Leaf Xin is like Leaf, right? And Leaf the player, right? I don't know nothing about this motherfucker outside the game. I can just, like, it's really easy to differentiate between the private person and the player. And the player should just, like, whatever goes. Basically, like, if you don't perform, you get it, right? Like, and I think that's the opportunity, by the way, if we're getting a new approach next year, I hope they realize that is like the friction that is created there needs to be there, and we will have to leave a lot of folks. Like, I understand that a lot of folks that are in Overwatch are specifically here because we do not have this, okay? Because they like that it is more harmonious than other competitive. I think, unfortunately, you're a minority in people that are likely to watch an esport, and you will probably, like, in the best ideal world, the future products will not accommodate what you want out of an esport, because the other audience is way bigger. You want the tribalistic nature of, like, a French crowd, right? You want the tribalistic nature of like regions against each other. You want someone saying some shit on the broadcast about like, what the fuck was that graph? Like that's a like insanely bad thing. Like you want the Nene graph to be like, to be memeified for the eternity and be able to do that on the broadcast as well, right? So yeah, I think that, but that's also a tale as old as the Overwatch League, that it was always a problem that because ownership was so close to the games, that they had too much power. Like, it's totally fine for the owner, by the way, to complain publicly. Just don't force the front office. Yeah. Why would you try to knock at the front office's door? Like, it's already like, I'm sure when you said the stuff about justice, right? I'm sure like you took something away from the public backlash, and that already like sort of had an impact on how you wanted to present your opinion in the future. That is already a pruning that is happening there. You do not have to do it on any other level than that, right?
Yeah, and I think that like that, like those kind of things, like it's something that a lot of us talent have been like struggling with, because it's like, you do have to be careful when you're criticizing certain things, because there needs to, and importantly, there needs to be validity to the statement, right? Because something that I think the NBA struggles from, you know, using that and the new media, is people just say shit for the sake of saying shit these days, just to get traction, right? You know, I'm looking at you, Perkins. Like, and that's really where the you need to keep focusing. But I think there needs to be a line where talent needs to be able to criticize and do their job, because it's not a participation competition. This is not something like, we're playing at the highest level. There needs to be some level of criticism when mistakes are being made and when they're perceived to be happening time and time again, all that kind of stuff. And that's why, you know, I literally, that day that I did the Washington, I was watching that match sitting there and I'm like, nope, I'm done. Like,
kind of frustrated,
I'm going to say something, because this is like, it needs to be said, right? Like something needs to be said at that point about, hey, like, it doesn't just need to be a Reddit meme. It doesn't need to be talked about. It needs to actually be addressed. Yeah. And like, you know, as Yiska said, I'm not attacking players. I'm not attacking the front office. I'm not attacking anyone personally. We're talking in broad strokes about the team as a whole and how they're performing in the server. That's how everything needs to say. And I think that needs to be continually addressed. Otherwise, at this point, we're just a Mickey Mouse competition where everyone's just happy to be here, which I think has become a problem with this current Overwatch League franchising system, where you can just participate and you are doing fine, right? Where what I'm hoping is, if next year we do go into a more open circuit situation where teams have to qualify, every team has to put their best foot forward, because they have to play and compete to be able to qualify, to be able to prove they deserve to be there. So we don't keep having, you know, let's use a Valiant as an example, where they're just fielding a team for fielding a team that's never going to compete, that shouldn't be there, that's not fun to watch in a lot of regards, right? So I'm hoping that we have more of that going forward, and that competition will be at an all-time high, regional pride will be at an all-time high, and that people will be able to feel excited and feel like matches actually matter. Because, you know, as I've said multiple times throughout this podcast, that is my biggest gripe with where the league has gone, is it doesn't feel like matches matter that much.
Oh. Yeah. It's, by the way, on the topic of Valiant, they do not deserve any of those players. Like, they overperformed their resources.
This year, they were great. What I said has nothing to do with the players this year. They've been great, as you said. They brought a lot of entertainment, a lot of fun, and even a lot of competition in a situation where they had no right bringing that, right? That was not the front office offering anything to help them. Every time I slammed the office, I love the Valiant. I love 2018, 2019. There were great people there, the management there, but they aren't there anymore. Yes. And it is literally just run by a skeleton crew that don't give a shit anymore. And that hurts us when it is our livelihood to talk about them and they don't care. So why should I care about you?
Yeah. Yep. Especially in the juxtaposition of like, a lot of those players actually do care a lot. Like, I feel dude, like, if there's Crusher 99, it's Seeker. Okay.
It's Seeker. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's talking about like hemorrhaging his own money to like put himself up, like he'll pay his own contract, just like let him play. Like, that's competition. Like, that's somebody who you want around. That's a lifer.
I was interviewing this guy and he was like, I'm like, oh, you're interested in collegiate? Nah, I just want to be the best in the world. Like,
just like, that's what we need. God. We need those people, man.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, in a duty for care, Just like, bro, no.
Homie's eating top ramen for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He's just like, no, I gotta work on my craft, bro. Job's not done. We gotta get in there. Valiant, you know, like, ah.
And that's how things used to be, right? Like, yeah. And I can speak from personal experience. I moved across the world to live mm-hmm. in Canada to be able to compete. And the way I ended up making it pro was not by just showing up and be like, hey, guys, I'm happy to be here. I had to grind. I played in some shitty-ass team that ended up playing in Gosu Gamers that ended up being successful, that yep. ended up giving my opportunity to play with the Team Fnatic, that ended up getting me multiple lands, that we ended up having to perform well at those lands to end up getting interest so that when the Overwatch League came around, they were interested in me as a player, right? That's how competition should exist. You have to continue to grind, find success, and then continue to find success to be successful. And I just, that's what I want. I just want yeah. that humbling competition where everyone out there has the dog in them and everyone's grinding, because you can't tell me that it's probably less than half, but there are a bunch of players who are just kind of coasting through off of their previous ability and that they don't actually care about winning anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, Varuna just actually leaked what we talked about earlier. Like the insinuation here is, who are you to Florida?
Wow. Yeah. Which, right, like that would be frustrating, right? Like, who are you is, I think we can all agree, is considered one of the best Genjis in the world. He just competed in the play-ins to try and qualify for the finals. It would be, like, whoever gets him, if it is Florida, that's a huge story and that's awesome. But then mm-hmm. it's like, so I'm not going to watch Checkmate in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That would really suck
yeah.
in the grand scheme of things. So it's like, I hope these rumors aren't true. And I hope that we see the teams as they are mm-hmm. going into the playoffs so that we can see every team play with the hand that they were dealt.
Also, like, I'm in my week off, so I have no idea if this is true, but I'm just going to say it as well. Varuna said Zarya, Genji, Soja, and Bab, Lucio is playoff meta. I'm not sure if that's true.
That would not surprise me at all. Like, yeah. that would not surprise me at all. Those heroes all synergize incredibly well together. Like, the Genji, you just bubble the Genji on cooldown. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't surprise me why Florida would go for a Genji, because you need, like, this isn't stand around Genji anymore where you're just climbing blade. This is going to be you're going in, you're going to get two bubbles and you're going to have a deflect. You need to kill one. Like, that's your job. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, then you're not doing your job. And there's not a lot of Genjis in the league who can do that.
Oh.
Who Are You is definitely one of them.
I'm interested to hear your kind of take on this. Another one that I think is a little bit slept on that kind of surprised me from these last couple playing games. Sugar Free, kind of dirty with the Genji. Kind of nasty with it.
Kid was born to play Overwatch. It's just sad. I really hope we get to see whatever Overwatch esports is in the future. Like,
follows it up, yeah.
He was 13. He was fucking us up when he was 13 5 years ago, right? Like, he's been around, you know, kicking around, just doing the dirty work. And it's cool to see him get a platform. It's cool to see him really be able to show what he has after all these years. Like, remember, he retired. He took a year mm-hmm. off last year, and he just came back.
That was the asterisk. So, like, bro, he's a, you know, he's taking a year off. He hasn't been playing. And then, you know, apparently he's got like 6 accounts in like top 10. It's like, all right, well, apparently he's been playing. And
we're just,
you know,
scratching the surface of like what he can offer. So, you know, I think, you know, if Vancouver make it, like, he's.
And that's when Yiska said that he actually loves dogs and there wasn't a technical issue.
Yeah,
so
he
had to cut out the part where, you know, we went off script and, you know, big Blizzard came in and they just couldn't let Yiska live. They had to cut him off at the knees.
True. It was only a matter of time.
They got him. They got to him. All the PR people just they hacked him. They hackermanned him.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I'm not sure how it is for you guys, but if your provider, like, I haven't been home in this apartment, and if mm-hmm. my provider goes like, oh, okay, he hasn't been home. Oh, he's back. Oh, this is very irregular usage of the internet line. There's something really weird going on. Let's shut this down. It's always the case. Like, I was, like, I had to go to my mom's to water the plants. So I'm on, like, online during a time she wouldn't be home. Instantly, internet off. Like, they're just like, oh my God, what is happening? Why is someone accessing the internet from this point at 10 a.m. in the morning? Is the robber, like, connecting to the Wi-Fi? Is that what it is? Like, it's so weird. Fuck Vodafone, by the way.
You're on Vodafone? Oh my God, I haven't used Vodafone in a hot minute.
I feel like the only reason why American... I feel like the only reason why Americans would know Vodafone is because they were like a big sponsor of like either European football. I think they were in like esports for a little bit, right? They did like a couple sponsors.
By the way,
Vodafone, they're big in cricket, I think.
Ah.
I'm just also being a piss baby. They're actually really reliable comparatively to any other provider I had in the past. Like it's just weird on those occasions. Like you download The Witcher and it just goes like, okay, that's your internet stability for like a week. It's like, okay, noted.
You've used your data. Subscribe to a premium account for unlimited.
The good old days of having to like limit your bandwidth usage every month to not get capped or throttled.
Right.
Yeah.
Unthrottling that discussion, you know, it's if Florida do land, who are you? And this meta does kind of pan out to be like the double pocket, the Genji, let him kind of cook, run all over the place. Who are you being a big player in that? You know, there's some thorns on the rose for sure. You want to see competitive players play, but you also want, you know, some level of security in what you're kind of trusting in the rules and what you assume when you kind of sign a roster. I think we were kind of talking about, you know, in the break, like, you know, you think of a team that did kind of splurge and did want to kind of build a super team. What would they kind of feel like, you know, what would they kind of think if at the last second they could kind of just sign whoever they wanted and, you know, all the rules that you would assume would be there kind of go out the window. I do resonate and do kind of feel bad.
Who's the best available Baptiste that's Korean?
Iris, maybe? I don't know.
Iris? Yeah, I'd probably say Iris. And like, he's a known Baptiste quantity.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player. Like, I think he would be strong. I'm surprised it's Baptiste, if I'm being honest. Mm. I'm surprised it's not a Kiriko. Kiriko, I feel like, makes a lot more sense in that composition. Baptiste did just get nerfed on the regenerative burst. Baptiste kind of gets rolled by Genji in a lot of respects.
True.
I don't know, like that seems surprising to me, but you know, it's the out teams, I trust them
right.
And what they're ending up doing. But yeah, I as you said, we were talking about it in the when we had that little break, and like if you're Atlanta, you're kind of upset that you signed this well-rounded roster that really can cover all metas. You have an off tank, a main tank, you have double flex support, you have all these options, and now all the other teams in the playoffs, it's not even like halfway through the season, in the playoffs, assigning holes that they had in their roster to sort of compete with you. Like, I can understand that. I would be frustrated if I had the option, especially when it's like players of the caliber of Who Are You. Like, yes, you can say, oh, well, anyone had the opportunity to sign Who Are You at any moment. Yes, that's fair. But Who Are You would only really be signed to an Overwatch League team if it's a Genji only meta, which looks like it's going to be. So Who Are You is only valuable on a short-term contract when you know a Genji meta is coming. So it's just kind of crazy that that's happening only in the playoffs. And I think if Atlanta loses, you will see some salty tweets about it, especially if they end up losing to a team that looks very different to the way they look right now.
Mm-hmm. To be fair.
I will say, don't sleep on Stalker Genji, dude. Like, that shit is going
Atlanta isn't going to... I would still put my money on Atlanta. Like, don't get me wrong. You're subbing in a Genji at the final hour, a player that, you know, is very volatile, or all those kind of things, right? Atlanta still is chilling all the way to the bank. But that said, they should be further ahead than they are.
Here's what's going to happen, okay? Someone is going to get MVP. Lip is going to get finals MVP. They are winning the title, and everyone is going to be piss mad because someone also is not a good Zarya. Therefore, proving the point that flexibility all the while was horseshit anyway.
I feel like that's a little bit slanderous. He did kind of break it out last year. It wasn't terrible.
Oh, okay. I'm actually going to go with Yisker on this one, and this is my take, is I think someone's biggest strength is his flexibility, and he is exceptional on a lot of heroes.
Sure.
But he is not the best at any hero.
Agree.
In my opinion.
Agree.
Yeah. And that's the thing. If we enter into a hard Zarya meta someone loses the ability to use his flexibility and understand it, because his strength is he understands the game so well that when he makes swaps, they're usually the right decision and they give them an advantage. But if you end up in a hard Zarya meta, all of a sudden there might be Zaryas who are better than him that cause problems, right?
Yeah.
That's fine because he's top five, I would say, probably every hero, right? Like in the league right now, I would say he's top five. Obviously better at some, worse at others. Zaya there is a very different hero. That's a hard hero. And I honestly don't even know what someone's Zaya looks like. We've probably seen it bits and pieces, but not enough to get a true gauge of where it stands up against other things. So we'll see. Maybe someone could struggle in these playoffs if he does end up being the solo tank. But if you're Florida, you're never taking someone out of that lineup.
Oh.
By the way, I love how like everyone's like, oh, Hangzhou doesn't even have an incentive to win against the Dallas Fuel in the final. And the- dude, Spark winning against Fuel, therefore denying them the direct qualification, might just save everyone's season at this point. Because if you look at that particular meta, right? It's Hanbin Zarya, it's Sparkle Genji, Edison, we know from last year that like he can hang on Sojourn.
It's okay, yeah.
Bliss is also really solid on Lucio as well. That's why I asked about the free BAP, right? Like if they actually could bring in Iris or whatever, which I don't think is possible based on the rules, but you know, like, this is a scary roster that actually legitimately could go all the way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like the Spark is the, you know, one good meta away. Like there's a lot of teams that are like one good meta away. And like, that's what happens when you have a playoff patch, right? Like I think let's use London Spitfire in the 2018 as a great example, right? Everything came together for them at the right time, at the right moment. They were terrible in the meta prior to like when the triple tank solo Mercy stuff came out. They were terrible at it. They were terrible at the meta prior to that. But as soon as that happened and they could play Prophet on Hanzo, Birdering on Widowmaker, Bedosin's playing Roadhog all of a sudden, right? Like that's what worked for them. And that's why they ended up winning the whole thing. Like that can happen to a lot of different teams. And the strengths of what got a team to this level might become irrelevant.
Also, to just pre-end the comments that we're getting, oh, you said nobody that is not in top three NA has no chance, and now you're saying Fuel would have it. Yes, because it's fucking Hanbin. Hanbin is to Zarya what Lip is to Sombra, okay?
Yeah.
That's the difference. That's why what we said generally makes sense, but in that particular sense, also because Sparkle Genji is also nuts, can definitely hang on a world stage. Like, there, it makes sense. Right.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, yeah, like there's not too many heroes that you can really hit. Like if you're saying if it's going to be Genji, Soj, or, you know, Zarya, like that's just kind of in their wheelhouse. Rush knows how to coach it. They know how to play it. That's kind of a recipe for success. Staying in APAC for a second. Is it weird to at least be kind of curious as to how the dynasty might play with that? You obviously have Void, kind of a, you know, a legacy Zarya player. Prophet, obviously, very good at Genji. The rest of it is a little bit more wishy-washy, but, like, is there room for a dynasty play-ins run that's a little bit more scary than maybe we're assuming?
I think always. I think Seoul are always a team that you have to be afraid from. And as you said, the meta can easily line up for them in a lot of regards, right? Like if Vindyne's able to just run around and play Lucio and do Lucio shit, like that's what he does best. And you know, they have like a lot of different options that they can play in terms of their like DPS. The problem that I think is I've just learned over the 6 years of the Overwatch League, 5 years of the Overwatch League, just never trust Seoul. Like at some point they're just going to decide that they suck and then Prophet's going to try to carry them and then they fall short. But they're definitely a dark horse team, but they have to make it through this bracket first, right? Yeah, they have to beat Dallas Fuel, and that's it's something that a lot of people aren't aware of, but like Seoul Dynasty are at the point where they're the Toronto Defiant of the East, where they're like, we're just going to play Illaoi everywhere and just like hope for the best, which might lose to the Dallas Fuel. There's only one team that's going to make it out of the Seoul Dynasty and the Dallas Fuel. I think both will be good in the Zarya meta and will be able to hang with everyone if that's where it ends up going, but
it's only one ticket out.
They got to fight it out.
Yep.
There's also basically no shot these two teams won't be in the finals just based on how shit Dragons have been, right? Like we are getting two matches of those guys matching up, right? Because in upper and in lower bracket.
Yep.
Or rather finals. So it's very likely that we're going to see that. I'm not sure. Seoul looked pretty good. Not gonna lie. Like, I'm not. Especially, I gotta say, Krillin on the Illaoi is kind of popping off. Like, especially the ult usage and like the sneaky, like especially on Flashpoint, really good ults there, like super efficacious.
Is he like trying to like punish them on like rotations where he's like, oh, I think we're gonna go, they're gonna go this way, so I'll like hide and ult him.
Yeah, and 3Ks, three or four, like
interesting.
Yeah, really.
That feels that's always like a read for me that like they feel very confident in their flashpoint. It's something that I kind of noted and questioned Christopher about a couple weeks ago with like London's flashpoint thing, where like they felt comfortable. They're doing all these like flanks and they're trying to like sneaky do some weird stuff, and maybe that's cheese, I don't know. That to me reads as like comfortable. That's what you is that a weird take?
No. I think it's fair. Like they at some point there is a level of comfort coming from, you know, being able to just play the same thing over and over again. But I think Seoul Dynasty's like record over the last four series is like a great example of they beat the Charge 3-1 and then they almost lost to SPG in the lower bracket.
Right.
They went to map 5, then they almost lost to Infernal in the lower bracket, and then they like beat the crap out of O2 Blast. Like, make that make sense in a lot of regards, and that sort of shows the fluctuation of the skill of the Seoul Dynasty. And they really do live and die by just individual brilliance from Prophet, from Krillin, and that's kind of how this shooter comp works when you're playing the Illari. So all the power to them. I just don't have faith. I guess the point I'm trying to get across is that Seoul Dynasty, in my opinion, isn't this well-rounded, well-drilled team in any regards. Is they're kind of just flying by the seam of their pants in a lot of ways, right? Like it could all crumble at any moment, especially if we end up in like a meta shift into the playoffs. So we'll see. They're a fun team to watch at the end of the day. Yes. And it's kind of crazy thinking that either Dallas Fuel or Seoul Dynasty won't be in the final playoffs.
Yeah. Did we not open with those two teams in the inaugural season? Like that, memory serves like that was the opening match.
I was there. Good times. Fucking lost.
that was a heater of a good match. If you want to go back and look at some crazy shit.
The game has changed a lot since then, if you want to go check that out, bro. There were just swaps left and right.
Yeah.
It was chaos. DPS going to tank. Tank going to DPS. Random Junkrat picks. Then we see fucking Widowmaker. Good times.
Dude, like, thinking about this and thinking about the competition right now, like, this moment, it feels, like, so special. And like, it's almost like... it feels like we're playing Squid Game at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every round of competition, we're just going to lose. Like, and it really feels... Dude, I was very close. I shed tears for Gladiators being out, okay? Like, that stuff got me, right? Like, there's a lot of history. And for Gladiators, it just feels much more secure because of the guard situation.
Yes.
That we're, like, this is actually the determining factor in this, right? Yeah, and also with that volatility, I think like even if the plans for the future look really good, I think this is a natural cutoff point. Like this is New Year's or whatever, where people will just make decisions for their lives, and we will see an increased amount of retirements going forward. So every match I'm looking here, and I'm just going like, this guy just lost this match, therefore their career might be over, right?
Yeah.
That's yeah, like you could absolutely see players like Kev'Sa retire, like because you know, let's say in the world, right? Let's go down that rabbit hole of if this is the last year of the league and we did go to circuit play, right? For whatever reason, that is going to be way worse for the players. The players are the ones who are going to lose out the most, in my opinion, in that situation. You don't no longer have a guaranteed contract for the year. Most of your money is going to have to come from academic organizations. There's no way a lot of them are going to be paying minimum $50,000 if the league isn't going to be as structured and guaranteed as it is now for some of these teams. So you can see a lot of players just sort of looking at the landscape of next year and just be like, it's not worth it. And you know, for players who have already had long drawn out careers like Kev'Sa, you could absolutely see him be like, I'm just gonna go and live the rest of my life, you know. This has been a good chapter, let's move on.
And every game feels like this, like and for Prophet specifically, we already know that this guy like is thinking actively about retirement, right? So if Seoul actually doesn't make it out of play-ins, boy, that will feel different. That will hurt for sure.
That's an end. I mean, all of this is basically an end of an era, and it's just a slow, like you said, just degradation. Every new day, we just have to say goodbye to some familiar faces, and that's never easy.
I will say as well, that's actually one of the saddest things that I have about the way that this circumstance is having is I wish there was some finality to the decision that this is the last year of the Overwatch League, because that would allow us to give a proper send-off to a lot of these teams and players who have given us so much entertainment and love and fun throughout all these years. It doesn't feel like we're saying goodbye to them in the long form because we don't have guarantees of that. We're sort of like half saying goodbye, half saying, you know, we're moving on. So it doesn't feel like we're able to give teams and players the proper send-off they deserve.
Yep.
I agree. And I also understand from the league's point of view why they can't do that, because it's contingent on the... But yeah, like single-digit percent that we're having an Overwatch League next year, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I personally treat it. And that with that come heavy decisions for those people who like lived Overwatch for a long time.
Yep.
I think there are formative differences that will inevitably, like, even if people really still have their heart in this, will like have to be decided upon. And I will just treat everything as like with the assumption that this is it, right? Like,
yep.
And very likely some, like a lot of players will stick around because they love Overwatch that much. They love the competition that much, right? And
Life Seeker, shout out.
There will be always competition to be had, but it will change in the nature and the people that will be around for it. It doesn't take humans much to reconsider their life, right? Like sometimes just like the number on the back of the year changing gets you into the gym, right?
Yep.
And or like I think the more like even in big shift, like COVID made a lot of folks reconsider, right?
Oh yeah.
This is like in terms of like how their life is lived, this might be as important, and a lot of people will consider where they are. And a lot of those guys are in their early 20s, and they might just decide, you know, like time to go to the next stage of adulthood. Have a lot of savings, maybe go to school again and whatnot. They have to make real life decisions based on incomplete information at this point. A lot of those things presumably have to already be done. I'm thinking primarily of the 60% of our Korean players who have looming...
It's like a military service.
Military service that needs to be decided. And a lot of them will take that next step. And therefore, like, I'm just looking at this and it... I won't lie, it adds a certain excitement to it. But it also is sad as shit.
It's super sad. It's you know what? You know, there are players that we've kind of, not to make it super flowery, but kind of grew up, we watched them kind of grow into their career, and we got to see, you know, the profits, the voids, the, you know, shoe. Like, imagine shoe story coming to a close, and like, you know, Houston doesn't make it all the way. Maybe they don't even make the podium. That feels weird to say, but, you know, like seeing that kid not be able to, you know, fight for a title, even though that we all know he has the skill to fight for one, and that's just it. And he's just like, yeah, I think I'm done. It's just not enough. There's not a lot of security. I still got like obligations to attend to. Like I gotta go.
Yeah,
the circuit's not gonna work for me.
I'm thinking of Yaki personally. Like that guy's story. I haven't talked to him. I haven't heard anything, but like, the story and how it works and his motivations that he has shared with fans publicly, it just feels like he has played his last Overwatch League game. And that's not based on no knowledge. I haven't talked to any coaches or whatever, but it's just like a guy that always like tried to be paid well, that like was free to move anywhere and was perfectly happy. And if everything changes to that degree, it's also getting up there in age, it might just have been the last match that he played, right?
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember, like, we say these guys are young, but, like, these are also, like, very important years.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And people are giving up, like, 18 to 21, 18 to 25, like, those really shape who you are as a person and where you go into the future. And it's worth noting, like, your life does come to a complete halt when you're playing pro. And a lot of those skills don't translate into anything else, right? There are very few career paths out of being a pro player that lead you in a direction that will help you in the long run, right? Like me personally, like I was a player, I'm now commentating. That's great. But if I wanted to get a real fucking job and you look at my resume, you're like, bro, what are you doing here, right? And that's what a lot of these guys have to do is like, well, I need to go back to school, right? I should go to college. I should do all these types of things. And when you have such a big shakeup coming like this and you're losing that guarantee and that salary that you've had for so long, or you've even just started attaining, it's a very easy time to ask the question of like, is it time to like find a new path, right?
Yep. Yeah, there's also like, these are the formative years where they really determine like who you are and going to be and how you're going to be perceived to be, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I think like it's often undervalued. Everyone's like, oh, they can still go to school, blah, blah, blah. Yes, but these are also like incredibly talented people that if they had take, like there's a ton of people in the Overwatch League that had like Ivy League entrance already like secured, right? Maybe not just on the American on
side of things,
yeah. But on like also in Korean terms, right? I remember, I think NYXL support season one, later Washington Justice, Smurfs.
Anamo?
No, other guy. Washington Justice. Yeah. Ark. I think had Ivy League entrance.
Oh, really? Well.
Yeah, Silk Thread, you know, like these guys are hyper talented. Like a lot of them are hyper talented. They put their life on hold for this.
Yeah.
I'm sure like a lot of it, they feel like it was worth it, but also the league didn't go where it was advertised to be.
Yep.
And they have to make hard decisions. And I feel like a lot of them will come away and think like, I'm not sure if it was worth it. And this breaks my heart for them, right?
I think especially for a lot of the newer generation coming in who are probably coming in on minimum contracts, like for people during my era of playing 2018, 2019, 2020, like even if you did blow out or like, you know, players didn't have the best career, right? Let's use the Boink example that Dante, you know, brought up where it's like Boink was making like room at 150K. Yeah. Like he didn't have a successful career by any, by most standards, right? But he also made 150K in a year, which at the age of, you know, 20, that sets you up in a lot of regards. You're not going to feel that regret. But you compare that to some of the players these days, like let's talk about the Valiant players who have been playing Overwatch for 5 years to finally get their shot in the league, and they probably get paid not very much money to compete, and their season wasn't as, you know, successful as they would like it. They had some fun and they probably made friends and they got to experience it, but they don't have a lot to come out of it with. Is the sad reality for those guys.
Nothing tangible. A lot of stuff that I think is probably worth, and this is not even fair to speak on and is incredibly biased, but you know, I think that at the end of things, I think it is like cool to like follow your passion and chase something and get to a degree of expertise in a realm. I think that's really, really cool, and I think that's endearing to as a person. You look at somebody and you ask them about their life and it's like, yeah, I was, you know, among the best, maybe not the best, but like I was there, I was in the conversation, I was, you know, battling some of the best people to ever do it, and you know, we danced a little bit, we had some words, and like that's pretty fucking cool. I think that's like dope. Is it dope for you? I guess that's for them to decide, but you know, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's tough. It's definitely dark in some realms. Let's hope that maybe the allure of the stage maybe gets people back. Obviously, that's a big gripe that a lot of players have. It's like, what am I doing this for? I want to play in front of people. I want to hear the crowd. Like, I want to be there.
If you never played on a crowd, that's what it is all for. Like, even just like that 1-3 weekend, it's not even just like playing in front of the crowd. It's everything that goes around with a live event, the fans, the interaction, hanging out with other players, everything involved with that, like playing. Yeah, it just, it's a completely different world. And it's a completely different life that, like, as you said, some players really might not ever get to experience.
Yeah,
I will say, I think there's something to be said about being able to demonstrate to remain and on the top of the highest level for several years and what it says about your work ethic. There's some anecdotal evidence that like the market has realized that there's potential in these grinders, right? Like that also, like it's not the guy that really is only like, you know, hard grinding Overwatch because they're like hyper focusing on the game and they couldn't imagine doing anything else. It's about the like super hard grinders that will sit on the aim labs, that will meticulously practice. And those guys just like have shown a level of tenacity and grind that will translate pretty well, right?
There's like core formative life experience isn't the right word, but like the way that they have like molded their brain in some ways, and maybe like through sheer willpower have like just put themselves in that driver's seat that like, yeah, there are career paths that is going to align with like how you've lived your life for the last N years, you know, like whether it's, you know, since the start of Overwatch or whatever, like it may not necessarily translate in terms of like skill set that you've developed, but like the underlying workings of how your brain, you know, what you're into, how much you can kind of give, like what kind of like tolerance or bandwidth of like willpower you can kind of like, you're talking about like, I feel like there is like a natural progression of like going into like, I don't know, coding or like anything real crunchy. I feel like you could probably put like a former pro player, depending on like who they are, and they probably could like jive with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just something that they can just grind out, like you said.
For sure. And that they like a lot of former Overwatch League, not just players, but also coaches and staff and whatnot, are doing pretty well for themselves, right?
Like
they just developed a skill set, it's being recognized at the highest level. If they can sell themselves well, it's not considered necessarily a hole in the resume, especially for something as visible as the Overwatch League. Right, like that was in the media for a while, so it might be even a boon on your resume if you can sell it well.
Yeah, I think that's probably the gist of it. Is like, can you make your employer believe that like this is going to be beneficial to them? And like you said, sell yourself. Any last thoughts, Custa, before we wrap up?
No, that's most of it.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. Well, before we get out of here, I do want to give you like a little bit of a you know, a platform. See if like, anything's coming up for you, anything you're excited about. Anything you want to plug?
No, not really. Like my Twitter, my Twitch, both Custa. I have a YouTube as well that I do VOD reviews for Overwatch and stuff. Obviously, we're about to go into the dark off season, so we'll see what ends up coming on that YouTube and all that kind of content. But I do have a content piece on the horizon after the Overwatch League finishes that I'm trying to get done. So keep an eye out for that
Very
one.
Cool.
But other than that, see you guys in Toronto. It's gonna be a great event.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeska, anything coming up?
I'm on vacation, but after I'm definitely diving into the playoff preparation content. Unfortunately, won't be able to make it out to Toronto. But like, yeah, looking forward to like, I'm not sure if what the access will be like, but I'm trying my best to bring as much Overwatch League content. And then, as it looks, I might just stick around for the next version of Overwatch Esports as well. So.
There we go.